Some majestic music to welcome Scott Washington into the room for this round of History Matters. How are you?
I'm doing good, Aaron. I always feel like everything will come into order and we will explain it all in this segment.
I cannot promise that even a little bit. I'm talking about O.J. Simpson, the parole verdict. Is it counted as a verdict, the parole ruling, I guess, coming in this week?
That's right. Though they did make clear that if he violates any portion of that parole, they won't be so generous.
Yeah. And I think it's weird. The one thing that was weird, I was talking with Tom Jensen about this last hour, and like neither one of us particularly care that much one way or the other. But the really interesting thing is he gets paroled, but they're not going to release him until October. So there's like several months that are going to go by where he's still in prison having already been paroled, which I think is a very odd
Hollywood agents were probably already on the phone as soon as that was going on saying, who will play that part?
Right. And Hollywood agents probably like, get him out of prison. We want this to happen in one day.
Yes.
Like he wants to walk out like the wrought iron gates opening up and he walks out.
Like Shawshank or something like
that. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But possibly less heroic.
Yes. Well, I think this is the part of that whole story. But it's how history keeps happening in front of our eyes, and sometimes it's dramatic.
Did you ever see the documentary, the five-part O.J. Simpson documentary that won the Oscar last year?
I think we all have seen so many. No, I didn't see that one.
It's really good. It's well done. But yeah, if you want to relive the O.J. Simpson trial for another 8 hours, go for it.
I'm sure this will end up as next year's, you know, this happened in history this week.
Yeah, right. All right, so what did happen in history this week? Today is July 20th.
That's right.
So it's moon landing day.
It is moon landing day.
Yes.
That's right. Which is, this is a week about stuff in the news about flight, historically, which is great. And of course, this is the date when the moon landing took place. And one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But that was, you know, today we would use more appropriate language. But that was 1968 when, and we... 69. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
With Buzz Aldrin, which is this is a kind of amazing stuff, the right stuff, which is kind of unusual. But now let's just look back in history, and this is on July 17th, and it was 1920. The New York Times put out an editorial saying, ridiculing the idea that rockets could function in the vacuum of space.
Yes.
And so when Apollo 11 was on its way to the moon, they published an editorial saying, well, we apologize.
We got that wrong. Yeah. Which they could have done earlier because rockets had been flying into space for a while
before.
Like Apollo 11
was not the
first by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it wasn't. And that's why this is a kind of interesting week because of that. There are things like... I saw one thing here.
I do appreciate while you're looking for that. The 1920 article, this presume, like his name is Dr. Goddard. I don't know much about this guy, but I presume he's a scientist of some kind who has some degree of expert knowledge about rocketry. And he suggests that, you know, this is a fact about rockets. And up comes this editorial, probably by some random person who doesn't know much about rockets saying that can't possibly be true, which does make me feel a little bit better about the fact that amateurs have been criticizing experts since time immemorial, and we've still managed to progress as a society.
Well, and not only that, but I'm sure that happened every time a balloon went up or the Wright brothers,
and everyone
said no, that can't happen, or cars, no, horseless carriage.
What would the biopic
cameras,
be? What would the biographical movie be without the person standing in the background going, you can't possibly do that.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Those are the kind of things. So that I think these are the interesting things about this week. Also, 1933, July 22nd, the first around-the-world solo flight is completed by Wiley Post in the Winnie Mae. Yep. Now, the interesting thing is the flight began on July 15th, so they kept going and going. But that's still pretty impressive.
Do you know if he couldn't have been up for 7 days. He
had to
have stopped and started again.
I think they stopped.
Again,
it didn't say And probably sent some postcards back, too, I'm guessing.
Possibly. The one thing, going back to the moon landing thing, like everyone talks about the moon landing and how great that was. I think I read somewhere that this is also interesting because... I think it was the guy who writes XKCD online has this Randall, what's his last name, has a book called What If about just sort of interesting scientific questions.
Yes.
And one of the questions was who was the human being, like the one human being who has been furthest away from any other human being. So you think about someone who's been like shipwrecked on a Pacific island or something, and they're like 1,000 miles away from any other human being. And he didn't know exactly what the answer was, but his theory is Michael Collins. Because Michael Collins is orbiting the moon while Aldrin and Armstrong are heading to the moon, and every other human being is way away on Earth. So
he's on the dark side of the moon. And,
exactly.
Right. That's
you talk about being isolated, at least for a couple of days, for a few hours or however long.
See, I might have said Ernest Shackleton when he was
possibly,
on that
voyage,
but no, that apparently not.
Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of around the world, Charles Lindbergh on July 20th, 1927, he had completed his that solo transatlantic flight, but he began the tour of the U.S. and he visited every state with his plane, the Spirit of St. Louis, which is still, you can go now to Washington, D.C. in the National Aeronautics Museum and see it there, which is kind of interesting.
Very cool.
But I wonder just how he packed the plane. Like, put the wing in that section there.
Yeah.
I don't think he flew. Maybe he did. This is one of those kind of questions that
going around the national tour.
Like,
yeah.
What did he do? Did he have a bus? I don't know.
Maybe. Is this one of those cool things? Like, if you're driving down I-40 and every so often you see, like, some big band's tour bus drive by, and like, ooh, the Rolling Stones might be in there or something like that. Like, is this one of those where like you're just driving down the road and all of a sudden coming the other way is some truck like towing an airplane behind it, and it's just irritating because you have to get off the road and wait for it to pass by.
This is the kind of stuff that I think really gets us interested in and people asking the what ifs. What if we could do this?
Yeah.
And to think that we weren't flying until the 20th century. And I mean, there were balloon flights before then, but flying mechanically, and that's a kind of remarkable thing.
Like, just what we've been able to accomplish 100 years.
Yeah. Of course, now with DNA, they can actually say, oh, you are related to this and this person. But, you know, we think of the internet as being, wow, this is super fast. And it's like, yeah, this is a recent development.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's not even a blink of the eye, which is...
it really is incredible. All right, speaking with Scott Washington, and there's another... there's another great flight-related thing that happens this week, which is Wrong Way Corrigan, right?
Yes.
Monday, July 17th, 1938, took off from New York, flying to Los Angeles, and just goes the wrong way and lands in Ireland. At some point, he had to look down and see the ocean,
he
right?
He did. Well, that's supposedly the story is it was foggy, and he... misread the compass, but he had flown from California to New York. He's like 21, and they said, no, you're really too young. And more than that, the airplane he was flying was too old. And they said, no, this is just not safe.
Yes.
We can't approve this.
Yeah.
So supposedly, it's in fog, he takes off, he's looking at the compass, and then he sees he's over water, and he keeps on flying.
So he's just BSing then.
Well, you never know how. Sometimes you get lost, and those are the best discoveries of all.
How coincidental that it just happened to go in exactly the right northeasterly direction to land in his intended destination.
Yeah, I think that's it. Well, unlike the lost colony of Roanoke, 1587, July 22nd, is when a group of 117 colonists land on Roanoke Island. And then 3 years later, because of that Spanish war on England, that's when a relief party can come back and there's nobody there.
Yep.
So they went off in another direction. I don't know if they got to Ireland, but I don't think so.
We're trying to go to L.A. I don't know what happens. But Horace Greeley said, "Go west, young man," and we just started swimming. I don't know what happened.
Yes. Well, whimsical things. Alexander Calder, who is credited with inventing the mobile.
The mobile.
And some of those are here at University Mall. There's some that you can see. So,
yeah. You can really, if you go to an art museum, you can really tell the Calders by the fact that they're hanging from the ceiling.
Like,
he really is, I think, still. And the Calder pieces, those mobiles that he developed, are just really, they're very striking. They're very, very cool. They're easily distinguishable from other just sort of mobiles that you would hang over like a playpen.
Right.
But I don't think there's any other artist since Calder who did mobiles as their thing. Like, there's a lot
of
sculptors, a lot of painters, not many mobile artists.
Of course, probably every elementary school teacher would say, oh yes, we invented this long
before
Alexander
Calder. We've got a mobile artist,
Little
Jimmy.
We've been hanging things on strings and sending them home with macaroni on them for a long time, which is great. But, you know, here's another thing we take for granted. Walt Disney's theme park opens in Anaheim, California, on Monday, on July 17th, 1955.
Yeah.
And that was simply because, and this happens, and these are how, you know, these ideas come to people, where he wants to take his daughters to a park, but it's trashy, it's a local amusement park, really kind of run down, and he says, no, we can do it better.
Yep.
And so if you have a good idea, if you're listening, and you say, oh, if only they would, you never know where that might lead, which I think is
And it's also the good advice of, if at first you don't succeed, keep trying, or just keep building on what you got. Because if you heard the stories of the first day of Disneyland, it was a failure. Like, nothing worked. There weren't any trash cans anywhere.
Really?
Like, you can get online and read stories of the opening day at Disneyland. It was just a colossal fiasco. Like, you sent me the thing about fiascos recently.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, day one of Disneyland was just a complete mess.
Well,
but day two was better. And then by the time they got to the end of the week, everything's up and running smoothly.
Well,
but yeah,
I feel
day
much
one was
better,
nuts.
Because I remember as a boy going to Disneyland, and two rides broke down. One was on a train, and we would see dinosaurs about to, you know, go at each other. The train broke down right at that point. And so for the next hour and a half, we saw the dinosaur almost. And finally, we're rooting. Just take a bite.
Just take a bite.
Don't be a vegetarian.
Oh, my God.
And then the other one was a Snow White Wonderland. And it was a ride. We were in giant teacups, and the power went off. And you hear the workmen clambering up going, well, what if we just turn the switch? No, they'll dump out. So I'm glad to hear that that first day was a little bit eventful.
Yeah.
But
I didn't get to
moments.
Disneyland. I've been to Disney World a few times, and most recently a couple of years ago, and it's so much fun.
Really?
I've never
been
to the one in California.
Oh, well, good. Well, I'm going to have to get there.
Yeah.
Well, here's in terms of other inventions. July 23rd, 1904 is the date. Credited with the ice cream cone being invented by Charles Mench in St. Louis, Missouri. When I think they ran out of bowls or something, and then
that was 1904.
1904.
That's the that's the World's Fair, right? Was that when?
That's right.
Yeah,
around that same time. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah,
which is kind
they
of
got
fun
a
to
they
know.
Got a run on bowls of ice cream at the World's Fair, and he invented he just invented the cone to put it in. I've heard that story.
Which is kind of
it's
good
really
to know
quick
that
thinking
it happened
too.
Yes, it is.
Also, did they just have a whole bunch of edible cones sitting around for some other purpose?
I
feel like they might have. Actually,
well, they might have had something or waffles. I think that was
They
said, well, let's put the waffles together, and that's how good ideas happen.
There you go.
But speaking of good ideas, you know, Tuesday, July 18th is the birthday of Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
Who was born on that day.
99 years ago.
Yeah, which is kind of amazing. 27 years behind bars in prison for fighting apartheid, and eventually becomes, of course, the president of South Africa, and is still, in fact, it's celebrated that day on the 18th as Mandela Day, and a global call to action celebrating the power of each individual to transform the world and the ability to make an impact, which I think is true with everybody. Everybody says, oh, I can't do it. Who am I? Well, you know, you never know if you're that one person that will stand up at the right time and be that voice of conscience.
Yeah. Everyone starts out having not accomplished anything, and eventually you accomplish things.
Yes.
You just have to take that step.
I will say that I did find some intriguing one about 1776, July 19th, 1776. that supposedly this is when the Continental Congress orders the engrossing and signing of the Declaration of Independence in a handwritten copy, which begins August 2nd, which is kind of an interesting kind of note. There is something that happens on July 21st. It didn't make it into here, but I know what it is. July 21st, 1788, a local thing.
Well, I don't even know what this is about to be.
At least you'll like this. Well, there's a constitutional convention held in Hillsborough for North Carolina about ratifying the Constitution. Lasts from July 21st to August 4th. And that is pivotal to becoming a tipping point for why the Congress takes up the issue of a Bill of Rights, because
that's
North
the one
Carolina
where
postpones
we say
it. Yeah, exactly.
Not right now.
But
yeah.
You know, you think of this kind of weather, and I don't know how hot it was in 1788, but it would have been kind of warm. And you're wearing, you know, a lot of stuff.
And the powdered wigs and whatnot.
This was the second largest meeting up to Massachusetts, so about almost 300 delegates and additional people crowded into this giant building, a former church in Hillsborough, but it's an exciting outcome that comes out of that because of what they do. It provides the pressure that Congress needs to take up the issue.
This is amazing that we lasted as long as we did, insisting on formal wear everywhere, considering how hot it was is, and on buildings with no air conditioning.
I think people just maybe it's like the Mideast, where you
wear
perspiration is caught and captured, and
you cover yourself to keep the sun out, right?
And now we don't know about global warming. In more recent years, that's much more of a factor now. We've adapted slowly to that, but certainly in that time, it would have been hot.
Yeah.
It would have been very hot.
Yeah.
Very unpleasant. Definitely.
All right. So, speaking with Scott, Washington History Matters, we got to wrap up in a second. I want to wrap up with Fergin Day.
Fergin Day. Oh.
On July 17th.
Yes.
I'd never heard of this before. And this is such a cool concept. It's a Hebrew term for genuine unselfish delight or pride in the accomplishment of the other.
Yes.
So
isn't that a great
seeing
day?
Someone else accomplish something and feeling great for them.
Yes.
Like,
I think that's a wonderful
idea. I think
idea.
That's such a great concept. Yes.
It's one of those sort of things that you go, wow, this is something that we should do.
Yeah.
And that's why I celebrate you, Aaron, and everything that you do all the time here. You're that voice of conscience, that Renaissance man here.
This is why I have you come on the air every week.
You're part of the history that people will look back and say, how did this community keep going? Well, obviously, Aaron Keck was on the radio. So, but see, I'm trying to say this is a Fergin Day kind of thing. So if you do that too out there and you're listening and say, I think we should do that. Anytime you're seeing somebody do something, catch them doing good.
Catch them doing good and feel good for them
good. That's right. And absolutely. Celebrate the fact when people have some kind of an accomplishment, you say, that is wonderful, instead of putting it down, which is a good thing.
Awesome.
So I agree that was a surprise for me too. That's why we always come back every week going, I never knew that was there.
Well, that is History Matters for this week. Scott Washington, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it.